Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 12, Chapter 4, Text Number 41. Purana Samhitam Etam Rishi Narayano Vyayaha Naradaya Pura Praha Krishna Dvapayanaya Saha Puranam. Of all the Puranas, Samhitam, the essential companion. Just open up that door, let me have a look in there. On the left hand side, what are the equalizer buttons pointing to? Those four at the top, which direction are they? Point them all to 12 o'clock. They all at 12? Do you know what I mean by 12 o'clock? Yeah, that's good. Yeah, okay, all right. Then maybe the high, push it to 1 or 2 o'clock. No, not there. The high, there's an equalizer, those four buttons. One will say high, medium and low. Is that right? Yes. Put the high to 2. Okay, that's good. Yeah, because it makes it a little more crisper. Crispy. Purana. Of all the Puranas, Samhitam, the essential compendium, Etam, this. What's this referring to? This. Anybody like to? Srimad Bhagavatam, yes. Rishi Narayano. Oh, sorry. The great sage. Lord Naranarayan Avyayaha, the infallible Naradaya, to Narada Muni, Pura, previously Praha, spoke Krishna Dvaipayanaya, to Krishna Dvaipayana Vedavyas. Saha, he, Narada. Long ago, this essential anthology of all the Puranas was spoken by the infallible Lord Naranarayan Rishi to Narada, who then repeated it to Krishna Dvapayana Vedavyas. No purport. In fact, no purport for the rest of this chapter, but anyway. There's two more verses which finishes the chapter. Savai Mayam Maharaja Bhagavan Badarayanaha Imam Bhagavatam Imam Bhagavatim Pritaha Samitam Veda Samitam. My dear Maharaj Parikshit, that great personality Srila Vyasadeva taught me this same scripture, Srimad Bhagavatam, which is equal in stature to the four Vedas. Who's speaking? Sukadev Goswami, yes. What relationship did Sukadev Goswami have with Vyasadeva?
His son.
It was his son. Imam Vakshat Yaso Sutta Rishi Bhyo Naimishalaye Dirga Satre Kuru Chesta Samprista Sonakadi Bihi. O best of the Kurus, the same Sutta Goswami who is sitting before us will speak this Bhagavatam to the sages assembled in the great sacrifice at Namasharanya. This he will do when questioned by the members of the assembly headed by Shonak. Of course, the whole Bhagavatam is actually being narrated by Shanaka Rishi. Sudha Goswami. The Bhagavatam that we read is all being narrated ultimately by Sudha Goswami. Interestingly enough. Thus, in the purports of the humble servants of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, to the 12th canto, 4th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Four Categories of Universal Annihilation. Oma gyanatimidandasya gyananjana shalakaya chakshurun militam jena tasmaye shri guruve namaha shri chaitanya manobhishtam stapitam jena bhutale svayam rupa kadamayam tadatitva padantikam mukham karoti vachalam pangum langayate gurim yakripa tamaham vande shri gurum dinatarinam. Purana Samhitam Etam. This is the essential compendium of all the Puranas. Originally spoken by Nara Narayan Rishi to Narada Muni. Narada Muni then gave the Bhagavat Purana to Krishna Dvaitpayana Vedavyas, to Vyasadeva. And then Vyasadeva spoke the Bhagavatam to his son, Sukadeva Goswami, when he was in the womb of his mother. After 16 years. And of course then the Bhagavatam was again spoken by Sukadeva Goswami to Maharaj Parikshit, when Maharaj Parikshit was about to leave his body. And of course that's the scenario that we're about to observe or witness. The next chapter is called, there's only 13 verses in the next chapter, it's called Final Instructions to Maharaj Parikshit. And then chapter 6 of the 12th canto is Maharaj Parikshit passing away. Then there's a discussion on the Puranic literatures. And then Sudha Goswami, who is a member of the assembly of sages and rishis who were present when Sukadeva Goswami spoke the Bhagavatam to Maharaj Parikshit, then narrated the Bhagavatam again to the sages at Naimisharanya, who had gathered. The sages at Naimisharanya had gathered to perform a jagya because they knew that the Kali Yuga was approaching, and they wanted to ward off the influence of Kali. You know, the rishis and sages have the best interests of the whole of humanity. Not just humanity, but all living entities. They have their benefit. They have their. They're concerned about the welfare of all. So, in order to stave off the tide of Kali Yuga, they decided to have a sacrifice. But in the process of the sacrifice, while trying to light the fires, they would normally use their mantras to light, but they couldn't. All they got was smoke. And then the potency of their mantras had diminished. Their Brahma Tejas had been diminished already. They could understand, no, the age of Kali Yuga is already upon us. Because that's how the Brahmanas' potency was tested, by their ability to light the sacrificial fires by the use of mantra. You know, we just light the sacrificial fire with a redhead. But they could light the fire by mantra. But all they got was smoke, which is, you know, this is in and of course, you know, smoke makes it very difficult to see anything properly, clouds the atmosphere. So the age of Kali is such that everything is very clouded and obscure. The reality is confused. So they discussed amongst themselves as to what they should do, and it was decided that they should recite the Srimad Bhagavatam. Because as it mentions here, the Bhagavatam is the essential, here is Samhitam, is translated as the essential compendium. If you wanted to combine everything into one literature, if you wanted to combine all knowledge or all aspects, and you know, the Vedas, basically Veda means truth or knowledge. And the Vedas deal with a range of information, a broad range of information, just like we have the Ayurveda, which deals with life, the prolonging of life, or medicine, if you like. Then on the other hand, you have the Dhanurveda, which is warfare, and basically that's for taking life. The Jyotish, there's a broad range of information contained within the Vedas that deals with all aspects of life. Moral codes, religious codes, social codes. So it covers the Vedas, it's sort of like when you buy a computer, then along with the computer comes a manual. Or you used to buy a computer and you would get a manual that would be about this thick. But nobody'd ever read the manual. Right? You just open up the computer and then try to use it. And if you had a problem, then you know, revert to reading the manual as a last resort. So just as the manual, of course nowadays they give you a CD or you read it on the internet, so just as a computer comes with an instruction manual that explains how to utilize it, how to use it, so similarly the creation is designed in such a way, Krishna's made an arrangement in such a way so that along with the material creation comes a manual on how to use it properly. Of course, nobody reads the manual, just like they don't read the computer manual, and then they can't do things properly. So similarly also, we don't read the manual, and then we wonder why things go wrong. So, the Srimad Bhagavatam is the most important literature, the most, the highest book, if you like, because it contains the essence of all of the information that is contained within the Vedas, the manual for how to run one's life properly. All of that information has been condensed, the essential part. As it mentions in the beginning of the Bhagavad Nigama Kalpa Turo Galitam Phalam, that the Srimad Bhagavatam is the ripened fruit of the tree of Vedic knowledge. Right. So the best part of the tree is the fruit. Right. The best part of a mango tree is the mango. You can chew on everything else, but there's nothing as relishable as a mango. And you know, you can chew, you can eat a sour, unripe mango. You can't, you know, they make a pickle out of it. The Fijian devotees, Jaisachi makes a pickle, unripened mangoes. But the sweetest and juiciest fruit of the mango tree is a ripened mango. So similarly, the Srimad Bhagavatam is considered to be the sweetest. It's the topmost product of the Vedic literature, the ripened fruit of the tree of Vedic literature, because it contains topics or subject matter which is to the essence of all existence. Or another example is the cream of milk. You know, the cream contains all the richness and goodness of milk. Just like Manigriva went to the farmer next door and got some milk straight from the cows. Then he let it sit in the fridge. And then on the top was a big pot of milk, but then on the top it came all this cream. Well, when we were kids, we used to get bottled milk delivered in the mornings. Doesn't happen these days. We used to get out the bread, the vegetables, and the milk all used to be delivered by a horse and buggy. And the milkman used to run between, the horse would just plunk along, he knew what he was doing. And the milkman would be running backwards and forwards with bottles of milk into everybody's house and putting them on the doorstep. So it had been there a couple of hours, and then by morning when you want to have your breakfast, then there would always be 3/4 of an inch to an inch of cream on top of the milk. So the cream is like the essence of milk. So the Bhagavatam is like the cream of the Vedas. And it contains within it the, you know, topics of that which is essential for perfection of existence. Just like the manual for the computer, if you read it, then it helps you to use the computer. So similarly also, if one reads the Vedas, then one is able to understand how to utilize the creation for its various purposes, or for a variety of purposes. But if one wants to understand the essence or the essential purpose of existence, then that information is contained within the Bhagavatam. And it's not just a religious book in one sense. It is a religious book, but it is not also. And Prabhupada explains that in the beginning of the Bhagavatam, he explains that the distinctive feature of human existence is the practice of religion. Right? The distinctive feature of the human society is the performance of religious duties or religious activities. And he gives the example, even in primitive societies, in the Aboriginal societies, you'll find that they're worshipping somebody, some higher being, some supernatural or higher power that's able to bestow some form of boon or benediction. Now, most religious activities are performed for material purposes, right? Most people go to church to pray, or go to the temple to pray for some personal benefit. You know, even in the Christian tradition, in the Lord's, the Lord's Prayer, "Our Father who art in heaven, give us this day our daily bread." Right? That's as much as I remember. There's more to it than that. And you know, we see it. There are people who come to the temple and basically, you know, they put their $2 in a hundi and then expect, you know, $1 million in return or, you know, some kind of reward. Give me peace, give me, you know, some kind of material motivation. And Prabhupada gives the example, you know, when people can get money or get something to eat, get their shelter, get the basics for material life through other activities, then they give up religion. And so we look in modern society and we see so many churches and places which were previously dedicated to worshipping God, they're now turning them into bingo halls and restaurants and other places of just material activities. So when people can get some material benefit without going to church, then they start going to church. Which underlines the motivation. The motivation for going to church is to get some material benefit. Or going to the temple is to get some material benefit. If they get material benefits from other sources, then stop going to the temple. Now, the distinction between, and we find, therefore, within the Vedic literature, and this is why The worship of the demigods is encouraged because at least it keeps people within the Vedic construct, and people are still going to the temple and they're still getting to associate with the Brahmanas. And by the association of learned Brahmanas, their focus can be redirected away from material things to purely spiritual things. And of course, this is the essence of the Bhagavatam. The worship, that's what Krishna mentions in the 7th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, that for those who are inclined to material benefits, then he makes their faith strong in some demigod. And then when they worship some demigod, then quickly their desires are fulfilled. And of course, as Krishna points out, that's all arranged by him. All of the facility provided by the demigods ultimately is being arranged by Krishna. But because people are generally motivated for material benefits, then they want to worship the demigods. Because everybody knows if we worship Krishna, we don't worship him for material benefit, but we worship Krishna for purely spiritual. Or, of course, Krishna may be worshipped for material benefit. Even in the Bhagavatam, it's mentioned, akama, savakama, va. Doesn't matter if your desires, free from desires, want liberation, whatever, then it's recommended that one should worship Krishna. But it's generally understood and appreciated that when one worships Krishna, then one may not get material boons. Right? There was that inquiry by Maharaj Yudhisthira, was it? Of Krishna. You know, why is it that Lord Shiva, who lives as a mendicant, his devotees are very wealthy and opulent, and Krishna is very wealthy and opulent living in Dwarka, but his worshippers are always somewhat impoverished. So, you know, worshipping Krishna is not so, it's not as attractive from a material point of view. Because Krishna is very kind to his devotees. He doesn't give them things that will interrupt or deviate their devotional service. And of course, this is what the Bhagavatam is about. The Bhagavatam doesn't deal with any material matters. The Srimad Bhagavatam is wholly and solely focused on devotional service to Krishna. In other words, religious life, not with a material goal, not seeking material benedictions, but religious life with the whole focus on developing one's relationship with Krishna. Not seeking material benedictions or boons. Yes, you are here, Toshan. And we're all looking at you. So the Bhagavatam is special in that its prime focus, its only focus, is on devotional service. And specifically, pure devotional service. Because we can, and we often do, worship Krishna for material benedictions. Krishna mentions in the 7th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita how there are four pious men who approach him. Ato atati jigyasu yanija. So there's the inquisitive the distressed, the seeker of wealth, the inquisitive, and one who's in knowledge. And of course, they're all recommended to worship Krishna. The Bhagavatam's for all of those persons, for everybody, ultimately. But the Bhagavatam's information is to encourage us to give up our material pursuits, material attraction or material attachments, anatta, that which is inessential, that which is impermanent, that which will not bring us any lasting and permanent satisfaction. Give up those temporary and limited things and focus on that which will give us a permanent solution to our problems and real satisfaction and happiness. And that is satisfaction and happiness in understanding our relationship with our eternal relationship with Krishna. And so this is why the Bhagavatam is the best, the most important, the ripened fruit of the tree of Vedic knowledge, because it gives us the essence of our existence. Our existence is to re-establish our relationship with Krishna. That's our permanent position. All of the trappings of material existence that confuse us are inessential. In relationship to Krishna, they all fade into insignificance. And the Bhagavatam focuses on this point. And the sages were inquiring, you know, when Krishna departs, how will the people of Kali get light, get an understanding of things? How will they know what is right and what is wrong? And the answer is through studying the Bhagavatam, one will be able to distinguish what is correct and what is incorrect, what is right and what is wrong. And that's why we study the Bhagavatam on a regular basis. Srimbatam sva kata krishna punya shravana kirtana hridyantastoya badrani vidunoti suritsatam. The Bhagavatam is dear to the sat, or the satvatas, the devotees, who are interested in the truth, not interested in the temporary and the impermanent. Hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam is punya, it's pious. Punya shravana kirtanam, hearing and chanting the Bhagavatam is pious activity. But not pious activity from the material point of view, which will accrue some material benefit. But pious activity, here Badrani, the inauspicious material attachments that we have in our hearts are automatically dissipated, dissolved by regularly reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam. So this is why we have the recitation of the Bhagavatam. Nashta prayashva badreshu nitya bhagavata sevaya, by rendering of service to the Bhagavat. And of course Prabhupada explains there's two types of Bhagavat. There's the Bhagavat the book, and there's Bhagavat the devotee. And we render service basically to increase our affinity or attraction for the messages that are contained within the Bhagavatam. That's the methodology. And for developing our attraction for Krishna. You know, we are somewhat jaundiced in our approach. We have an attraction for Krishna, but at the same time we also have this disease, if you like, this attraction for things material. And, you know, sometimes as a devotee we wonder, am I a devotee or am I a demon? Am I a demon or a devotee? Because due to long association with the material energy, we've become contaminated. Our original spiritual position has become contaminated, and so we think we are still a product of the material energy. But yet, on the other hand, there's a strong affinity and attraction and an affection for Krishna, or for Krishna's devotees, or for the practices of devotional service. So by regularly rendering service, and especially by rendering service through hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, one imperceptibly dissolves one's material affection, one's material attraction or attachment. That's what the Bhagavatam does. It's my experience that you know, you can get up early in the morning and go to Mangal Aarti and then chant 16 or as good number of rounds as one can, 14, 15, 16 rounds, and then still feel a bit disturbed, right? But then Guru Puja and then the Bhagavatam, and by the end of the Bhagavatam one is actually peaceful. Or maybe that's just me. You're all saintly persons who don't have these problems. And certainly in my experience as a young devotee, put a lot of effort into chanting Hare Krishna and still the mind carrying on. But then to sit and hear the philosophy of the Bhagavatam and to absorb the mind in the narration of the Srimad Bhagavatam, absorb the mind in the philosophy and the practice, the theory, if you like, of devotional service. Who am I? What is my relationship with the creation? What is my purpose? And how do I go about pursuing that purpose? It's all explained within the Bhagavatam. And so by absorbing our consciousness in those messages, then the inauspiciousness, the attraction or the affection for material things is dissipated. So this is the importance of the Bhagavatam. And we can see how important the Bhagavatam was to Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada would rise early every morning, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning. It was his mission, basically, to give us this literature. And, basically, Srila Prabhupada condensed the tikka, the commentary of all of the acharyas, huh? And compressed it, put it all into his purports, so that we are getting the learning, the understanding, the focus of attention from Sridharaswami, from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, from Jiva Goswami, you know, from the various acharyas, Vira Raghava Acharya, so the esoteric, if you like, understanding and the exoteric understanding of the Bhagavatam, all compressed into Srila Prabhupada's purports, so that we could understand the importance of the Bhagavatam, so we can understand the philosophy and practice of the Bhagavad Gita, and so we could also then go and do it, actually put it into practice in our lives. There is no other literature like the Bhagavad Gita, unless we're looking at the Bhagavad Gita. But then, of course, the Bhagavad Gita is, you know, that's the ABCs. It's the introduction spoken by Krishna. Whereas the Bhagavad Gita is spoken all about Krishna through the agency of, as it's mentioned here, originally Naranarayan Rishi, who spoke to Vyasadeva, and Vyasadeva spoke to Narada Muni. Oh, sorry. Naranarayan Rishi spoke to Narada. Narada spoke to Vyasadeva. When Vyasadeva had compiled all of the Vedic literature, then he was still despondent. And then Narada Muni pointed out to him, you've covered all of this material religiosity, if you like. You haven't covered the essence of spiritual practice. So, he encouraged him to compile the Bhagavad Gita. And then Vyasadeva spoke the Bhagavad Gita to Sukadeva Goswami. Sukadeva Goswami spoke the Bhagavad Gita to Maharaj Parikshit. And then Sudha Goswami, who was in the audience when Sukadeva Goswami was speaking, he then recited the Bhagavad Gita to the sages of Naimasharanya. And that was the cure for the ills of Kali Yuga. Right? They wanted to perform a sacrifice to stave off the effect of Kali. They weren't able to light their sacrificial fire. So what was the sacrifice? The sacrifice was to hear the Srimad Bhagavad Gita. So, you know, hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam is one of the five principal angas of bhakti. Was it sadhu sangha, nam sankirtan, bhagavat shravan? Hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam. Yeah. Murti seva and maturavas. Worshipping the deity and residing in a sacred place. These five items have great... They have the potency to endow Krishna pran on even those who don't have faith in them. They're so potent. These five activities. So Prabhupada sacrificed a good part of his life as a preacher, just to give us the Bhagavad Gita. So important. You know, when you think of the gifts that Srila Prabhupada gave us, they all revolve around actually these five principal angas of bhakti. Prabhupada gave us the Association of Devotees, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. He gave us Sankirtan, you know, the means, the devotees are the means by which these things can all be delivered. The Bhagavad Gita is delivered by a devotee. The holy name is delivered by a devotee. So the devotees came first. Actually, the devotee came first. That was Prabhupada for us. But he gave us that association liberally, gave us his association liberally. And, you know, he gave the holy name, the chanting of Hare Krishna, and he gave the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Bhagavat. Then later came the worship of the deity, when the devotees could understand who the deity was Then came the Dham. Actually, Prabhupada created, we were discussing this the other day in Adelaide. Prabhupada actually created the Dham in all of the places where he established the temple. Amazing. So Bhagavatam is most important literature. There is no other book that eclipses the Srimad Bhagavatam. And why we should worship the Bhagavatam by regularly reciting and hearing the recitation of the Bhagavatam for our purification. The Bhagavatam kicks out any trace of materialistic or material motivation and emphasizes the performance of pure devotional service, so that by the performance of pure devotional service one can reawaken one's original relationship with Krishna. In the various rasas, five primary rasas and the seven secondary rasas or relationships with Krishna. You know, there's no other literature, there's no other religious tradition that teaches this information. There isn't. That we have a relationship with God, and that relationship is of a particular quality or of a particular characteristic, a particular personal connection with God. That, you know, other religious traditions or other approaches to God don't deal with the personal. God exists, but he's all pervading energy or whatever, but there's no personality. But in the Bhagavatam, the personality of Godhead is described, and the nature of one's relationship with him is described. The Bhagavatam just has information in it that you cannot find anywhere else. Don't find it. I might finish here. Does anybody have any comments or questions?
Sometimes we hear that the Bhagavatam is the saints workers of the Bhagavatam. The saints workers manifested in the saints.
Oh, the saints workers, yep.
But the saints workers of the Bhagavatam were manifested in Hari Gopama. The content of the Bhagavatam is passed on in that way. So here we're hearing from Narayan Rishi.
So who did Narayan Rishi get it from?
That he's Narayan Rishi's incarnation, of course.
Yeah. But that's the question, isn't it? Where's Lord Brahma fit into the picture? No, I don't think so. Who knows what Lord Brahma's connection is with all of this? Anybody? I don't. But it's something we can find out. Anybody know? Good question. Yes. Come back and tell us tomorrow what the answer is. there'll be a connection. There will be some connection, because there are descriptions of, in the Krishna book, in the 10th canon of the Bhagavatam, isn't there a description of the rishis on the heavenly planets having a recitation of the Bhagavatam? I'm pretty sure there is. Yeah. In, is it the prayers of the personified Vedas? In that chapter? A long time since I've read it, but I think there is. There's a discussion. So, you know, the Bhagavatam is, what's the word? It's, you know, very often you'll hear one history of a presentation or of a course of history, but that doesn't mean that there aren't other manifestations of the Bhagavatam, and that it's being discussed elsewhere. I mean, it's such an important book. You would think that somebody like Lord Brahma would know about it. Right? But I think if you did the research, you would find that there are other instances of the Bhagavatam. This is just a short description. I don't know the answer, but I'm sure there is one. Anything else? Okay. Kantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaura Bhaktavrinda ki jai.